Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another great Wednesday night, the fastest 2 hour on internet radio. I'd like to welcome our legends. First off, from the Jersey Shore, Mr. Don Henderson. From Hotlanta, Mr. Roger Hendler. From down here in Tampa Bay, Mr. Roy Cummings. And gentlemen, is anchors the ship every week. Great job every week, Mr. Frank Carroll. Hey, Roger, I'm going to start up the conversation with you. I'm watching the Winnipeg Jets, okay, watching the pregame stuff, right? Remember that? That's still makeup of the same Atlanta Thrashers right now. So it's really Atlanta's playing Montreal for the losing round. Isn't that something, though?
Yeah, and my question is, if they had stayed in Atlanta and there was no Winnipeg team, what would they have done about the Canadian playoffs? Because you would have had another American League team, American-based team, and one less Canadian team.
Wow, that's a great question.
You know, they're
question,
still trying to figure that out.
Boy. Well, this big win Roy Cummings bought the Lightning the other night. I mean, it's just this team, I think, is poised for another cup run at it, Roy. But what I've been seeing, you know, that has been playing, is, you know, his defenseman standing up also great, too.
Well,
let me interrupt just for a second. We always do dedications at the beginning of the show.
Okay. Yeah.
And you and I and Roger were talking and take a little moment of silence
with
the Iron Horse. Lou Gehrig, they're honoring him all throughout baseball today. It's Lou Gehrig Day and it's ALS Day. And I think everybody knows what ALS is all about. Lou Gehrig, of course, contracted that disease in his major league career, and he's really been the focal point. So Frank suggested, and I agree, we should take just a moment to honor Lou Gehrig.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay, Roger, go ahead.
Well, just, who can ever forget that speech, Don, that Tommy Frank and you and we were, Roy, we were talking about before we went started the show. It'll just live in infamy. And what I mentioned was that at the beginning of the Braves telecast tonight, Chip Carey did a really nice piece on Lou Gehrig. And there's three statues in Cooperstown that are very special because they've had a major effect on society. It was Lou Gehrig and then also Roberto Clemente and Jackie Robinson. And I thought that was Chip did really a nice piece on that.
No question. And, of course, one of the diseases that we just hadn't been able to get a real handle on is ALS. And Roger, you said at the beginning of our conversation, too, that and the Phillies always held a day, Phillies Day, Phillies Night. ALS was the focal point of everybody pitching in and being a big part of Phillies baseball and the charity. So we have to give Phillies a little bit of a salute today because they were in it early.
Yeah, well, they have an auction going on right now. So at Phillies.com, I think it is. And every year they've done this. And you can remember as long as we can remember, Don, that they've done this. So they're to be congratulated.
No question. Tommy, let's get back to your sport. The Flyers had a great game last night. In fact, they've had two great games so far.
That's right.
But especially last night, they controlled almost the entire game, winning it 2-1, and showed exactly why they're right now the best team in the league.
That's right, Don. I was just doing a lot of thinking about last night. I mean, here it is. Cervelli reminds me of Rick McLeish. Edmund reminds me of Jimmy or Joe Watson. And Vavileski reminds me of Bernie Perrant. It's all about 1975 all over again with those three players, Don, and then. And without those three players, I mean, the Lightning would have never won that hockey game last night. And, Roy, what do you think about that? I think those were the key players in the whole series out there. Because you remember 2004, what was the key for this Lightning in that one series? Chris Dignan went out there going corner to corner to corner to corner to eat up time. And we don't have to do it anymore. To play with speed, technically, and the great thing for that organization right now, it's something to play for. And Carolina's got a lot of work to do tomorrow night at the arena. And as the Lightning can jump on those the first 2 minutes of the hockey game like they did before, I think it's start saying, let the fat lady come in for Carolina on Saturday and start singing.
And Roy, tough time last night between the television. The Rays had a great, great game against the Yankees last night at Yankee Stadium. And, of course, we just indicated the Lightning playing the kind of game that they played last night, winning it 2-1. And I know you probably had your finger on both games, Roy.
I had my finger on two games, the Lightning game and the Cubs game. I missed the Rays game, as good as that was. The Cubs were playing the Padres, so I had my I was following that one along with the Lightning. Tommy, who's the Dave Schultz of the Lightning? Would that be Patrick Maroon, maybe?
I think Patrick Maroon, Cedric Paquette gets him started up there. Our guys are backing away from Cedric Paquette. Remember last year, guys, when Paquette was on the Lightning? How many dumb penalties did this man take on the ice? He took every stupid dumb penalty out there. And guess who saved him? Guess who saved the Lightning? Cervelli on the shorthand player, Yanni Gord. And I'm looking forward for tomorrow night. I think Austin has to be pumped up, fired up, and send Carolina where they belong, back to Hartford with the original state.
Well, they're not going back to Hartford. They'll go back to Raleigh. But, you know,
right.
You're right. I mean, let's face it. You know, you got to give – look, one thing you can't take away from the Lightning is that they have been – I think the most dominant team in the Eastern Conference so far.
Mm-hmm.
They really had no trouble whatsoever with Florida, it seems, and so far not really much trouble with Carolina. I mean, they're not scoring it at will, they're not allowing much either. And you know, right now they look. You're right. They look poised for another cup run. You know, mm-hmm. things could get a little bit tougher if they end up facing. Now let's see who they face in the next round,
right.
But it's starting to look
mm-hmm.
like they're going to get there. That's for sure. But you know,
right.
we'll see how it goes. It's going to be a tough one for them. Islanders, Bruins. We'll see what you know what they can do against those teams. I think they'll have a little bit more trouble with Boston. They probably would rather face the Islanders. You know. So, either way. They're playing exceptionally well. You know, the goaltending has been outstanding, which you expect. The defense has been very strong. The penalty kill, very good. They're so aggressive on the penalty kill. It's really frustrating for other teams on the power play. You know, same token, I wouldn't say that Carolina can't bounce back and win a game here, you know, before this is over. That could happen. And if they suddenly win, you know, two, well, they could make it interesting. Carolina's good, and
mm-hmm.
Rod Brindamore is a smart coach. He's
right.
got the guys who can shut down. I mean, they've already done it. You know, they've done a pretty decent job, really, of shutting down Stamkos, Kucherov, Point. Point got a goal the other night.
Right.
But
mm-hmm.
What the Lightning seem to have better than anybody else is they have guys who really step up on those second and third lines and give you some offense. I mean, Alex Killorn has always been at his best in the playoffs. Yanni Gord is another one who's like that. Blake Coleman is certainly that level of player. They've got guys who just really step it up and play at an exceptionally high level. You know, and they've done it even with some injuries. You know, or Eric Chernak wasn't 100%
mm-hmm.
last night, but still looked good.
Right.
Look, they're the Stanley Cup champions for a reason. They'll continue to be until somebody eliminates them. And right now, it's hard to find anybody it's hard to look at anybody and say, well, that team can eliminate them. You know,
right.
A lot of people talking now about a possibility of a Colorado-Tampa Bay Stanley Cup
Ooh.
Final. That could happen. That would be a lot of fun. That would be a great series with a lot of star-caliber players for sure. So, but let's, you know,
Edmonds,
one step at a time.
Edmonds is a pretty select company too, Roy. I don't want to – all the players you mentioned are playing really well, but Edmonds went with a little bit of a nick. We talked about it last couple of shows. Would he be 100%? But he moved into some pretty good company last night.
Yeah, he sure did. And look, you expect that out of Victor Hedman. Playing
mm-hmm.
hurt, again, we don't know what the injury is. You know, but he's apparently, supposedly he's got something. You know, there have been a couple times when he hasn't quite looked the same, but then there's been times when you don't seem to notice anything. So I'm kind of the ilk. If you don't want to tell us what the injury is, then he doesn't have one. You know, I think it's great that these teams come around and say, oh, you know, he played with this or he played with that. Like, you know, I don't want to hear it. If he's out there, he's out there. You know what? Everybody's got a little something
right.
going on. It's like it's that way in every sport. It's that way in the NBA. It's that way in the NHL. It's that way in Major League Baseball right now. Everybody's got
That's
a little
right.
something going on. If you don't want to tell me what it is, then you don't have a problem. And I don't want to hear any
right.
griping and moaning about it.
Exactly.
So he's got to step up. He's done it. But you know what? So is everybody else. I mean, what I like is, you know, Jan Ruda shows up last night, plays well. Luke Shen has to step in. He plays well. They've lost a couple of, you know, key guys. David Savard on the penalty kill. It almost doesn't affect them. I mean, they're still as good a penalty killing unit as there is. So it's just a very deep team. And right now, I'm not sure I don't know that anybody outside of Boston in the East can beat them. I don't think – I certainly don't think I don't think the Islanders can. I mean, the Islanders were looking really good last year, and then all of a sudden they ran into Tampa, and it was kind of like there was
right.
nothing left in the tank. The same thing
mm-hmm.
would probably happen this time. They'd have to be a couple of rounds in to face them. What would they have left? Do they have enough scoring to beat them? I don't know that they do. Boston is a team that I think could beat them in the East, but maybe the only one – of the ones that are left. And then you go out west, and, you know, who do you like out there? I do like Colorado. I think that would be an exceptional series. But you never know. Somebody else could give them a surprise, too. So we'll see. I mean, these playoffs have shown us a couple of things. With Edmonton going out, with Toronto going out.
Right.
It really doesn't matter what you did in the regular season, because those regular season records aren't showing up for much of anything. If Tampa was third, and they were, well, in their division, well, they've already knocked off the number one team, or the, I'm sorry, the number two team, and now they're about to knock off number two, so or number one. So
right.
They've looked by far the best team in the division and probably in the conference.
Roger?
Roy, and, you know, all, I have to give credit to Al Morgani for this statistic, but I found it very interesting. I'm sure you will, too. There is only one player surviving in the Stanley Cup playoffs that is making a double-figure yearly salary.
Ooh.
You mean multi? You mean more than $10 million?
More than $10 million a year. $10 million or more. There's only one player
that?
Now. I forget who it was that he said. But
not Washington?
And I don't know. I forget who he said, but I thought it was a fascinating statistic that because all the big names have all been knocked out, just like you said, Roy. Okay, you know, the Lightning knocked out number one. Now number two. Now it's going to be number one, and so all the high money makers are eliminated. The big names.
Well, you know. When Toronto went out, I mean, you know, let's face it. Well, Marner wasn't making 10 to 12 million, but Matthews was. You look over at Colorado, and Nathan MacKinnon is making, I think, 6 million. So, you know, it's a weird stat, but it makes sense because I don't know that anybody on the Lightning. Maybe it's Stamkos. I'm not sure what his salary is.
Stamkos,
but,
right.
You know, I think it probably is. But, you know, most of the guys, again, you're talking about young stars, and with a salary cap, it's hard to give guys, you know, $10, $12, $14 million in the NHL. So, and a lot of these guys are young players, young stars, and, you know, they're just they're not going to be making those $10, $12 million just yet. They will eventually, but they're not there just yet. And most of them are making, you know, somewhere between $6 and $9 million. Carey Price could be the guy. I'm not sure. That's a great stat, though, for sure.
Tommy, what's their top and middle? Where do they stand?
That's a good question up there. I think probably in the middle, because you got a couple guys who are over, Stammer, Cooch, and Babaleski. Then you got a couple guys who are under right now. So, I mean, right now it doesn't care about how much they make. It's the difference of hockey is for everything else. These guys play for the love of the game. And by George, this is the best time of year, Don, and everybody watch all these hockey games. And all the guys that play come in. And you know, Roy and everybody, you got to feel sorry for Toronto again. Since 1957, they did not win a cup. They came close in the 70s. They had come close a couple of years ago with the acquisitions they got, Austin Matthews up there, and still haven't got come up with nothing up there. So, oh boy, if you're a Toronto hierarchy, Toronto fans, Leaf Nation's not very happy right now after seeing what Montreal did. So Montreal's taking their place in the playoffs.
Yeah, they are, and I guess some people might feel sorry for Toronto. I know they don't feel sorry for them in Montreal, and.
Right.
Probably, you know, some other places as well. But, you know, look, they've got a team full of stars, and those stars have not figured out how to play, you know, after April 1st. They just haven't figured that out. Mm-hmm. And it's really amazing. I mean, you know, I think one thing to what Roger was saying, that, you know, one thing that stat proves that there's one player left making $10 million or more in the NHL playoffs right now is the fact that in its own way, through the salary cap, the NHL has reached parity. Anybody could be the team. You know, a year ago, I don't think anybody saw Dallas getting to the Stanley Cup Finals. 2 years before, nobody saw St. Louis getting to the Stanley Cup final. When a team like Las Vegas can come in as an expansion team, and granted the rules have changed in terms of how expansion drafts are going, but still you're basically picking up somebody's, you know, eighth or ninth best player. You know, they go to the Stanley Cup finals. It's amazing the parity that is in this league right now. When Montreal can beat Toronto in a division playoff, that's exceptional. I mean, that just shows you when Washington gets knocked out early. It just shows you how deep this league really is and how balanced it is. Now, part of it is also that it's just a different game in the playoffs, and if you're not built for it, if you're not mentally built for it, physically built for it, you're going to have some problems. But that's one of the things that makes playoff hockey in the NHL so exceptional, is that you can't just you literally can throw out everything that you saw in the regular season because it no longer means anything.
Yeah.
The best players have to be the best players, but you know, you've got guys who just have a knack for stepping up in big moments and playing a different style of game, and sometimes that's just the style you need to win at this level.
Right, I think as simple as your first fact. I think, first of all, Bettman and the National Hockey League got their players' contract together very, very early. They do have a solid cap on where the money's going to go, and I think that's what balances it out. I think it's as simple as that. You can't go out and get 10 players and pay them all kinds of money, you know, like the New Jersey Nets did, and win a Stanley Cup. You can't do it.
Right.
No, I think you're right. And the best example of that is Toronto. Toronto had, you know, three, four of those guys making big money. You know, now they're trying to figure out, well, what are we going to do? And you know, there's a lot of talk about Mitch Marner being moved. I heard an interesting trade scenario where with guys left with time left on their contract, maybe another year, Marner's got another year left in his contract. You know, there's talk about maybe an exchange of a player. Marner going to another team for a high caliber young player like himself, who's only got a year left on the contract and may not be back. You know, so for example, maybe Seth Jones with Columbus would be a guy. But it's amazing to me that a team like Toronto, which everybody praised so much, and I can you know, I gotta say, as much praise as I heard for Toronto all throughout the course of the year, you know, on the NHL network and just, you know, in NHL circles all over. By the way, Montreal is now up 1-0 on Winnipeg.
Yes, 1-0.
But so it just amazed me that all of a sudden, after all this praise, and while all that praise was going on, I was saying, you know, you're kind of, to me, it's a small sample size. Yeah, you're seeing them dominate, you know, Winnipeg, Montreal, Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary. They're not dominating Boston or Washington or Philadelphia or Tampa Bay or, you know, even, you know, Colorado or Vegas or L.A. for that matter. So I always kind of thought, it's like, you know, ease up on the gas here a little bit, folks, because Toronto may not be as good as you think. They're in a bit of a bubble.
Right.
And that's why, again, these playoffs are hard to gauge because, you know, Tampa was in that bubble and did well for a while, then kind of, you know, streamlined, and then all of a sudden they kind of fell down. You know, they kind of lost it a little bit near the end. But now look at it. So it's really hard to judge the way this season, this preseason, this regular season went. It's hard to use that as a gauge for what you're going to see here in these playoffs.
Roger? Well, I'll tell you, Roy, I look at the Flyers early in the season. They look terrific. And very deep with talent, and they were very successful against Boston. And now, like you said, and you know, now you look at Boston and the Islanders, and the Islanders were strong. But I agree with you. And you know, the thing that gets me is that the Canadiens have not been stronger over a number of years as they were in, quote unquote, the old days, which, you know, was a while ago now. But, you know, I can remember years ago we were – go ahead.
Were you talking about Montreal Canadiens or the Canadiens?
Yeah, the Canadiens, yeah. Montreal,
well,
I'm sorry.
They,
yeah.
They, look, Mark Bergevin's their new general manager, and he's a first-time GM, former Lightning defenseman, And look, they've tried some things. They had a pretty good offseason here. Their problem has been finding the right fit after their top line. I mean, it's the same problem a lot of teams have. They've got, you know, two of the better defensemen in the league, and Shea Weber and Ben Sherrod, and then you've got some really good talent up front. But they've had problems, finding a penalty-killing unit, good second, third-line centers and wings. So they've had to work some things out. A couple of guys haven't quite worked out the way they hoped they would. So it's been a bit of a battle for them. But I'll tell you what, you know, they showed up in the playoffs last year. They showed up this year. They've surprised a lot of people in, when it really matters. They might just be a little bit better than people think when it matters. And it's really just a case of, you know, they might be a better team, a better playoff team than they are a regular season team because they're a little more balanced. And as long as you got Carey Price, you're always going to have a shot. So they're getting there. One of the things that kind of hurts them is they keep getting to the playoffs and they're not picking high in the draft. They could use a couple of high draft picks. Maybe the next thing they have to do is trade some of these second and third line players, package them for somebody's first pick, and then package that first pick with their own and see if they can move into the top five somehow. That would really give them a boost, I think, if they could get a player of that caliber.
Roy, before we run out of time on our first segment here, as always, give you a little shot to talk about the surprise season out there in Chicago. Nobody thought at the beginning of the year that they were going to be one of the teams that would be surprising people a little bit, but they certainly have.
Yeah, I assume you're talking about the Cubs because they've been exceptional. They just finished off a three-game sweep of the Padres at home. Padres came into Chicago this week, guys, with the best record in the National League, and the Cubs took care of them. And the Cubs are just playing exceptional baseball. What's amazing about the Cubs right now, guys, is that they're getting it from places that no one expected. They're getting, by the way, 2-0 Montreal. And Winnipeg's not a bad hockey team either. But the Cubs are getting it from places that, you know, Javier Baez is playing exceptionally well, leading the team in RBIs. Chris Bryant is playing at the level that you expect Chris Bryant to play at, MVP-like level. They're getting some starting pitching. The bullpen has been exceptional, absolutely exceptional. But they're getting it from guys. They got this kid, Nance, one of their relievers, who they got out of independent ball. He's playing for a team in Chicago in an independent league. And this guy's got a 0.00 ERA. They've got a couple of young kids up that have helped him a lot. Guys like Eric Sogard, who they signed very late in spring training. Matt Duffy, who they signed late. Patrick Wisdom, a former first-round pick of the Cardinals, who just really hasn't had a chance to play a lot at the major league level. He's got 4 homers in the last 8 games for the Cubs. He's had to play because Anthony Rizzo's been out. The team's playing exceptionally well. They're getting help from every corner of the clubhouse right now. Everybody that seems to get in the lineup for them, and they've really had to test their depth, has come through for them. They're playing good, smart baseball. And right now, I think the big question is, you know, right now it's impossible to see this team trading away Baez, Rizzo, or Bryant at this point, or Wilson Contreras, any of those guys. I think they've got to hold on to all of them. They got to run this thing as long as they can, see if they can do it all the way through June, July, and August. It's a tough run, but they've got the capability. It's evident now. They make things happen on the bases. They're a fun team to watch right now, guys.
And, Roger, other than last night, you could say just the opposite about the Phillies. Joe's having a very, very tough time making that team perform.
Well, as Tommy said in his text the other day, they are really a bad team. And I think that everybody would agree, and we'll see an improved team now that they're out of May and into June. Because we don't need another but I'll tell you, the Braves are tied with Washington 1-1. But Freddie Freeman's not playing first base. I hope there's not an injury there.
Oh, boy.
All right, that's going to wind up our first segment. And once again, Roy, as always, a pleasure. And we got the Cubs in before you got out the picture. And and also most of the things of the National Hockey League that really stand out. So thank you once again. It's a pleasure always.
Have a great week, always, guys. Thanks for having me. Take care. Have a good week. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks, Roy.
Well, we're going to continue talking about the Lightning, Tommy, because Brian Bradley's on the line right now, and he's going to give us obvious. He's going to give us the first down.
Bradley didn't answer his phone. It's Stevie. Stevie's on.
Stevie's on. Oh my God, we're going back to baseball.
Okay.
ALS tonight. Stevie's the best guy to have on ALS tonight.
That's right.
Hi, Steve. How you guys doing?
Hey,
very,
Dave,
very well.
Always great to
very
hear
well.
Your voice and talk to you.
Absolutely. Tell you what we'll do. Roger, we'll let you kick it off tonight with Steve.
Steve, we were talking about it a little earlier. It's ALS Day in the major leagues, and because of Lou Gehrig, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. And I mentioned the Phillies have been involved in this for years and years. But I know that you as a baseball person, you have to be really happy with, what the major leagues are doing about this dreaded disease.
Yeah, anything they can do to help. I mean, it is a horrible disease, and families have to fight it. And, in many ways it affects, it affects people that don't have it just as great as it affects the person suffering from it. You know, I mean, it's very, very difficult for a loved one to have to go through this with another loved one, you know, when that person doesn't recognize you anymore. And you hope that someday in the future families don't have to, in the twilight of their years, deal with a loved one not recognizing them or going through this deterioration that we still deal with today. So, I mean, that's all I can say about that. It's horrible.
No question about it. Two things I'd like to bring up with you, Steve. One would be you were absolutely correct on one side of the ledger, and maybe I was a little bit correct on the other. I thought Cooper was going to be a great sign for the Yankees for not too much money. He looked great when he pitched the no-hitter. But unfortunately, as you discussed and we all discussed, he goes on that IL all the time. He just can't stay healthy.
Yeah, it's a shame that he went on the IL, and maybe he makes it back. But, whenever I see pitchers, and this is a very odd year, you see it all over baseball. Guys right now are just entering periods where they're increasing their innings from last year. Many have surpassed their innings from last year. And you have to wonder how they're going to get through, June, July, August, September. And then you pile on guys that have been injured the last couple of years, or in the case of a man like Domingo German, was suspended and didn't pitch. Now you're adding questions about how are they going to respond from not having an inning workload over 2 years. You know, Jameson Taillon, for instance, is a guy that hasn't pitched in 2 years. Chris Archer, who ended up on the IL with the Rays, hadn't pitched in a couple years, a year and a half or so. So a guy like Kluber that has, I believe, one inning or so in the last 2 years coming into this year, one, he had to fight getting back into pitching shape, and two, he had to keep his mechanics in line to avoid injury, and unfortunately, he wasn't able to avoid the IL.
Tommy?
Being an Indy fan, I am. Steve, did you see the play in Pittsburgh about a week ago? Oh, my God, this set back major leagues over 100 years. The Pittsburgh first baseman caught the ball. He ran toward home. You know, it could have only used a force out. He didn't tag the guy home. Run scored. He threw the ball wildly in right field, not run scored. And all my years of life in baseball, at a professional, I never saw a baseball play like that. And all baseball was just so powerful.
Yeah. One of the famous things, and I think anybody who's a baseball fan on this call
would agree to, is you tune into a baseball game because you're bound mm-hmm. to see something happen that you've never seen happen before.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of the sport. Now, that play is very something I've never seen happen before. And I believe it was Trevor Williams of the Pirates who said the real problem with that play was we should have been yelling, you know, all of us on the bench and on the field should have been yelling on what to do on that play, and we were dead silent. So, you know, that's a basically a team fail. But, no, I've never seen a play like that. In my memory banks, and I've gone off on tangents before with you guys down memory lane, I don't have one. That was unique.
Tommy, I'm losing you. I don't know where the Roger is, but I'm at a
– Yeah, Tommy's
you're breaking
moving
up
around
a
in
little
the
bit.
House.
If I can interpret, he was saying that Derek Shelton may, you know, probably needs to get the team in line, you know, and that's probably true. Derek Shelton probably needs, you know, to get a little more buy-in from the players, you know, and one of his own players said that was a team function error, and it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody on the team needs to, you know, get together and make that, you know,
right.
Let them know what's going on out there.
Roger?
What did they spend all the...
Did we lose Roger?
No, he's on.
Okay. Roger.
I'm here. No, I wanted Tommy to continue because, you know, we lost him and then to get him back.
Oh, okay.
No, go ahead,
Roger. We got you, Tommy, or no?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Roger, up.
Okay, hey, Steve, you know what's really interesting this year is the parity that's in the NL East, and they thought there was going to be parity. Phillies have did not play well in May. You know, we'll see what happens. But the Braves are, you know, they're there and they're good. But who do you think in the NL East? And let's take it division by division. Who do you think will wind up winning their division in each of the National League and the American League?
That's an interesting question. Now, the key variable in the National League East has been injuries. I mean, if you want to start with the Nationals and, you know, Steven Strasburg not being able to, mm-hmm. you know, get off the schneid and a few other injuries there, including, you know, Juan Soto, who's, you know, for Juan Soto is not putting up the kind of numbers that you'd like. You can go to the Atlanta Braves, who, you know, before the incident, Marcell Ozuna wasn't hitting, but he also got injured. Mike Soroka, they expected him back, and he actually had a setback, and he's probably done at the minimum until late August, you know, maybe early September. We'll have to take a look. The Mets, you know, they thought they were going to get Carlos Carrasco back in mid-May, and now he's been pushed back maybe till mid-June or maybe closer to the end of June. We'll have to see how that hamstring responds. So, you know, for that division, you know, and of course, you know, we look at the Phillies. You know, Didi got off to a slow start, and he's on the IL. Bryce Harper got off to a great start, and then went, I think, 2-for-26, and it was revealed that, he's dealing with hand and forearm issues, and that makes sense. Bryce Harper's a much better hitter than a 2-for-26 guy. So you got those couple injuries to deal with. So as the year goes on, these teams are going to kind of get healthy or bring in reinforcements from the minor leagues. You really overall have to like the Mets if they can get healthy. You know, but then again, you know, as I say that, I just recall that Noah Syndergaard got shut down from his rehab and will be out until September at the earliest, you know. So,
right.
They did get Seth Lugo back into their pitching bullpen, and Tommy Hunter, the back wasn't as bad as they thought, you know, and, you know.
Yeah.
He'll
Luger pitched today. He was they won a game 6-5, though. 7-6, I guess it was. 7-6 okay. Districts tomorrow. Anyway, they won late in the game, and you're right. They've been playing, of all the teams in the NL East right now, I don't know if they're the best team or not, but they've been playing better than anybody else.
Yeah, and they're quite injured, but as their guys come back, I expect them to play even better. So I do like them. You know, they've got the nice mix of starters and a nice mix in the back of their bullpen. They
right.
don't have that, you know, as I always say, if you don't have a bullpen, I'm not going to even discuss a team going very far just because you can't. You know, you guys in Philadelphia saw it for back-to-back years. It just, in today's baseball, no bullpen means no winning. So I like the Mets. I like the Mets. Now, the interesting, you know, going on to the, NL Central with the Brewers, who are a surprise, you know, picking up Willy Adames, early on, makes them even better of a better defensive, you know. But they did lose Lorenzo Cain now. It's an injury to hurt that defense a little. But they've got decent enough pitching, you know, and they run like the Rays with Craig Counsell. You know, he'll bring anybody in at any time for any duration. And I do like the team. They're a little bit starved on offense relative to the Cardinals and Cubs, in my opinion. I do like the Cardinals, but losing Jack Flaherty now, here we go with the injuries again, to an oblique injury, which mm-hmm. the manager has called rather significant. Losing Flaherty for any extended period of time is going to make it hard on them. And then you've got the Cubs, who are getting a resurgence from Bryant. You know, Rizzo's playing and Contreras. They've got the offense. The pitching's holding up. And Craig Kimbrel is lights out in the back of that bullpen, allowing them to mix and match leading up to him. So right now, with the with everything going on, the Cubs look like they actually have a very good chance of, you know, staying in this thing for a while and maybe even, you know, being the team that comes out of that division on top. It's kind of a toss-up between those three teams. Milwaukee's offense will be the variable that I think will hold them down a little compared to the other two. Out of the National League West, we have you guys' favorite guy out there in San Francisco, who now has the bullpen. The guy now has the bullpen to go to, and suddenly he knows how to manage, which is funny.
Roger has a picture of him on his wall in his bedroom. He always says a little prayer with him every night before he goes to sleep. You love him.
You're right. Yeah, he learned how to manage because he a lousy years in Philadelphia, and then Klentak. You got to agree with this, Steve. Klentak did absolutely nothing, and McPhail, but hurt the Phillies in their long-term growth.
Well, I'll stick to the managing style of Gabe Kapler, and just let you guys know that, like Tito, the man knows how to manage. He just didn't have the tools given to him in Philadelphia. And when Tito left Philadelphia, he seemed to have done pretty well. And when Kapler left Philadelphia, he's probably going to do pretty well as long as he has the tools provided for him. And you need a little bit of luck, gentlemen, when you take over a team. I mean, the resurgence of Buster Posey and Evan Longoria this year, I don't think anybody saw that coming. Including Gabe Kapler. And if he said he did, then he's probably lying, you know. But in that division, I'll still take the Dodgers. You know, if I was going out to Vegas and putting money down, I'll take the Dodgers, even though they lost Dustin May, another injury. They've played this far without Cody Bellinger. They just got him back. So, you know, David Price just came back to be a spot starter. Maybe they'll stretch him out as a starter. But I like the Dodgers, I like the Padres, and I like the Giants. It'll be a fun fight, but I do like the Dodgers. Until someone can dethrone them, I'm going to stick with them. The AL
Tommy?
West is a little
I got to agree with you right there. You know, see, what about Cleveland's situation? Hats off goes to Terry Francona, who managed to close to 1,000, you know, game up there and that, and you think you still got enough talent to win that division out over in Cleveland?
No, I've said since day one that offense won't be able to carry him, and I don't believe, you know, Tito and the guys are running that pitching staff as hard as they can, hoping the offense will catch up and they can take the foot off the gas a little bit. But it, right. it's just not going to, you know, it's in my eyes, Shane Bieber's just going to wear down as the year goes on, as is all the rest of the starters that Tito has forced into pitching six and a third, seven innings,
right?
You know, to try to bank as many wins as possible early in hopes that guys like Ahmad Rosario and Josh Naylor and a few other guys would really pick it up at the plate. And maybe if the offense would, you know, click, they'd be able to back off on some of that pitching. There's no question about it. The bullpen's fine. I mean, they got a nice bullpen. The problem's going to be if they lose a few starters, you know,
right.
For an extended period of time, or starters go in the toilet because they're tired instead of being tired in August or tired in July.
I worry about the game. I worry about the game. Last night, I don't know whether you had a chance to see all of the Yankee game against the Rays, but Sanchez leads off with a double. I can't remember whether it was the ninth inning or the tenth inning. A ground ball to shortstop right in front of him. He tries to run over to third base. And when he's made more base-running blunders already this year than anybody in the American League. Tonight, I'm sitting here while we're doing the show and I'm watching. And the Rays have runners on second and third. They're down 2-1. Ground ball, front of the runner on second base. Tries to go third, out by 10 feet.
Well,
I mean,
actually the Rays were down 2-0 and the run scored on that play. There was
the run scored, but the time
it was on second base.
It was still
a stupid base running play. And
stupid. And last night the same thing.
Yeah, that's gone on as long as I can remember. You know, that the runner at second, especially I think in today's game, if you don't do a mental check of whether they're shifting or not, you know, usually guys are being shifted and you can take a look and say, okay, I've got, you know, if there's a ground ball, you know, there's going to be a hole. Well, both times the shortstop wasn't shifted behind second base and both times it was an easy out. So, you know, what the base runner needs to realize is they're not cutting behind you to pick you off and leaving the hole over there. They're staying stationary, and in those cases, they both need to make sure that they're more grounded than they are. You know, a lot of times also what happened to the Rays just now is the second baseman was playing right up the middle and was basically standing on second base. So as soon as the shortstop got the ball, if he doesn't break the third, he's done at second base. They got him in a rundown. You know, because he was taking a secondary lead, which, again, is stupid because you shouldn't be taking a secondary lead if they're holding you on with the second baseman. So that's kind of where the Rays situation, what Gary Sanchez was doing last night, because he had his head down from get-go.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching, and he had his head down from get-go, and you can't do that. You can't have your head down, you know, looking down at your feet.
Baseball 101, Steve. Baseball 101. You learn that in a little.
You're right,
I mean, it's incredible what these guys are doing.
Yeah. The only difference is in baseball 101 is the second baseman now is standing basically on second base, and if there's a hard hit one hopper to the shortstop, you're probably going to be dead. You have to either get picked off at second or you're going to be thrown out at third. Your only option is not to take a secondary lead. And,
right.
you know, you've been taught since Little League Baseball 101. When you're at second base, you got to get a good secondary lead. So if there's a single, you can score from second on the hit, especially with the shallower left field in Yankee Stadium. But Baseball 101 says take the secondary lead. Baseball 2021 says the second baseman's holding you tight, so you can't take a secondary lead. And that's where we're seeing a lot of the issues. Where players are still following Baseball 101 and they're getting burned because Baseball 2021 is kind of stepping in and saying, no, we're not going to give you an easy return to second or an easy, you know, secondary lead, which is fascinating.
Well, in this particular case, I had to disagree a little bit because I think the shortstop was playing at least 10 feet the left of second base. I mean, it was not that.
Well,
was not even that close
a second,
play.
It was a second.
But let's
base.
Go to Roger because I know he's got a more interesting question than I do. Go ahead, Roger.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, I think it's very interesting that Major League Baseball, as we talked about in the past, has taken over Minor League Baseball. And, Don, the Trenton Thunder do not have a major league affiliate now. And
that is correct.
Now they're talking today about the Reading Phillies moving if they don't upgrade the ballpark by 2023. At least you have a couple of years, and they're working on it. I think they'll work that out. But I just think that Major League Baseball is just dominating too much. I think it's about time. Somebody stops them from doing what they're doing. I think they're ruining the game. I've said it for a long time with analytics and all this crap. And, I mean, it's good to have some statistics, but baseball's been a statistic sport for years, probably from the beginning of time. And, Steve, what's your opinion about what Major League Baseball has done with the minor leagues?
I love it. I've told you guys from the get-go that Major League Baseball needed to do this 20 years ago and take over the minor leagues. Minor leagues are, you know, a great operation. The way it is now and the way it was in the past, you know, was a little too haphazard. The parks weren't up to code. I'd much rather have a corporate entity like Major League Baseball running everything than having individual leagues and stuff like that having too much of a say in how the game is going to work. So I love it. You know, I wish it would have expanded the number of players that teams are allowed to have a little bit. I won't get into exactly how that works, but at least it went from 150 to 180 under contract and 190 over the off season. I wish they would have expanded that a little bit more maybe a third option in the Dominican or, you know, in one of the winter leagues. You could get two Dominican teams. Maybe they should have allowed three. But, no, I love it. I mean, I told you guys, I watch minor league baseball maybe one or two games a morning. You know, when I get up, I go to my computer and I turn on a game and I watch it, and it's fantastic. You know, and I love it.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I love going
to the game. The only thing, you know, like for me, I'm totally opposite. Baseball has never been better than it is the last 10 years. It's better. It's a better product, better overall. Because I only care about, you know, what I only really only care about the batter and hitter battle. I want to either see a strikeout from the pitcher or a hard hit ball or a home run from the batter. And I really don't need anything else, so I'm a little bit different. You know, baseball.
How old are you, Steve? How old are you?
51. I go back to the 1980s, you know, where the baseball in the 70s was just really boring with, you know, putting the ball in play and, you know, grounding, you know, guys like Roy White and Jack Brohammer and guys like that, you know, and Alan Bannister and Tom Verizer and, you know, these guys that were like hit 270 to 280, but that's all they did. It was just boring. I mean, I watched these old games, and they, you know, basically, you know, if you want excitement back in the game, put the turf back that they had in the 80s back into like a seven or eight parks, and you'll get your excitement back. You know, if you want a little bit even more excitement, you know, expand, make, you know, dilute the pitching a little bit more. That's an easy way to make baseball more exciting is dilute the talent. You know, if you want a better brand of baseball, you know, there's a lot of things you can do, you know, to make it better. But, you know, the idea of, you know, what Major League Baseball.
Steve, I'm old hat too, just the way Roger is. For instance, last night you said you watched the Rays game last night. You realize how many batters batted in that game that are hitting under 175? 175.
I've told you guys, I can care less about batting average. All I care about is if a guy can hit the ball out of the park, get on base, or if he can.
You'd rather watch 12 or 13 strikes.
He's not getting on base.
Yeah,
He's not getting on base when he strikes out.
Yeah, like right
I looked
now.
At that Phillies game last night. It was a joke. In the fifth
right,
inning, there was already
the,
like nine strikeouts by the Phillies.
But if you look at the yearly numbers, you know, if you look at the yearly slash line in baseball, on-base percentage and slugging, it continues to rise from the 70s to the 80s to the 90s to the 2000s to today. The on-base percentage and runs scored and slugging continue to go up. I don't need to go back to watching guys, you know, slap a ball into play. Now,
wait a second, Steve. That you gotta attribute a lot of that, and I don't mean just a little bit or a great deal of. I mean a lot of it, the ball they're using. That's what's causing the home runs. Not these, and the stronger players and they're bigger players, but they juiced up the ball because they want a lot of home runs, and everybody that comes to the plate. I mean, last night, for instance, a perfect example. You're going to this crazy rule of putting a guy on second base to get these games over with. I mean, they can't even move a guy from second to third with nobody out to try to win the game. I mean, it doesn't even make sense.
As long as they don't bunt. I mean, Brandon Lau, the first thing he did was ground to second and move the guy from second to third. The next guy tried to get a fly ball and didn't get it deep enough. So they did exactly what they were supposed to do. They just couldn't get the fly ball. They moved the guy from second to third. That wasn't an issue. The guy that
but he's
made
the only one they moved. He's the only one they moved.
The guy that made it not an issue was Clint Frazier, hit the ball out of the park. Then it didn't matter if you moved him from second to third. You know, I mean, the main thing is, you know, Major League Baseball, the biggest mistake they did was, in my opinion, to kind of ruin the game. Was they got rid of the ability to take a guy out at second base on the slide. They got rid of the ability to run a catcher over, and they put instant replay in the game to take the manager umpire fight out of the game. Three things that fans used to absolutely love in the 80s that even no matter what you do in baseball, you'll never get it back. You'll never have
I got to say, I don't disagree with that. I think
no,
that,
I don't either. I agree.
Yeah, I think those were three things. I think some video replay is fine, but I don't think because a guy steals second base and takes his hand an inch off the bag or a half an inch off the bag, and you show it 18 times as you call him out. I mean, that's a ridiculous use of replay.
It'd be fun to see a collision at home plate again.
Well, McCarver, I've done a lot of shows with Tim McCarver. He is 100% opposed to that. And they go back to Posey. Yeah, that's who they bring up each time they talk about this rule. Is the fact that same thing that happened. Go ahead.
Hey, you want to hear something funny about the Posey play? The Buster Posey play is exactly how you want it to be played today. Posey was in front of third base. He gave the guy a clear sliding lane. The throw took him into the bag, which is all legal today. This is exactly the way the rule is written. The catcher stands in front of home plate. He could block the sliding lane. He has to provide it, but he could block the sliding lane if the throw pulls him into the baseline. The Buster Posey play, under today's rules, would not be an illegal play in any kind. Because he was standing in front of the bag, he caught the ball, turned, got into the sliding path, and got hit. Which is exactly
I could
how
not
you
agree.
Want to
I could
it.
Not agree with you more, except one thing: the identity of baseball in those days, from Pete Rose right on up, was you wipe the catcher out. You don't try to slide and find a spot. You wipe the catcher out. You try to get him to drop the ball. You try to make contact with him either just before he gets the ball or he's on a short hop, and you wipe him out. That's the reason for the rule, and I agree with you. The Posey thing was fine. But as Timmy McCarver said, why in the world are you going to sacrifice your catcher because you're trying to create a collision at home plate?
Well, baseball's, you know, sports are violent. Football gets a lot of their television audience on those hard hits, you know, and they show them over and over and over again, and they, you know, they'll throw a flag, but they'll capitalize. I mean, take a look. You can't tune into a Rays and Yankees game without watching Aroldis Chapman throw the ball at Mikey Brostow's head at almost 100 miles an hour. Major League Baseball, the telecast, they're going to continue showing that and living off of it. So Major League Baseball is one of the sports that has decided to de-escalate any kind of physical contact, and it makes the game kind of bland and boring, you know, for me at least. I mean, I like home runs. I like strikeouts, but I also like some action on the base, you know. You see guys, these guys, as they slide today on a double play, they're not even in the camera angle, and they're going down.
No.
They're not even trying to take the guy out at second base on a double play.
Well, and they should. I agree with that. But I listen, what I don't understand with you is that you, I understand you want to see home runs and you want to see strikeouts. But my point is you got to get on base. It's nothing better than to see a home run when you got two or three men on base. Okay, it's exciting.
The
and if you're just going to strike out and, home, and hit home runs,
you're higher now that it keeps going up, the on-base percentage. It keeps going
mm-hmm.
up. Hitters are getting on base more and more. They're just doing it via the walk. Oh, there's a hit. They're doing it via the walk and other mm-hmm. other ways of getting
Yankee,
on base.
Yankees just scored a couple
batting.
More. 4-1 now that the Yanks lead the race. Frazier just got a line drive single up the middle. And, of course, he won the game last night with the home run. But let me just take it. Let me put it in this context for one. I'll get Tommy get in here, too. But interesting baseball. I can't see how you think striking out and hitting home runs is interesting. You got to sit there with nothing happening, probably 7 of the 9 innings. I mean, nothing happens except they strike out.
Depends.
That's it.
It depends how you view nothing happening. I watch international soccer, which is 90 minutes of nothing happening, but I find something interesting
right.
happening almost every minute that the ball
mm-hmm.
is on the pitch. So for me, I know it's a good way of putting it for you guys, but for me, what pitch the guy is going to throw to what location, to what speed,
mm-hmm.
and what plane he's going to cross, and is the hitter looking for it, and where is the defense,
right.
and how is everything going to change after the pitch? To me, that's baseball. That's my way
mm-hmm.
of watching baseball. I don't care about, I seldom care about, you know, who's on base or what's the situation or anything like that. For me, the way I watch baseball is a
Tommy,
simple...
we'll let you wrap this one up with Steve. So we'll let you get the last question in before we go to Mike.
Okay, Steve, how you doing tonight?
You sound much better now. I can actually hear you.
Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Oh, God, you're thinking about Lou Gehrig Day. Today is a very, very precious day in baseball. And, you know, this, you know, like the speech up there, the movies. And you think about that. You think, how many times during the show, and I figure, how many times you went to Cleveland Stadium and you sat in the same seat that Lou Gehrig could have sat and not playing that day. And I was very fortunate because I was in the innings quite well. They said, Tommy, come down here and take some swing shoes for kids. Swing Shoes for Kids, one of the big charities, which I helped them out involved in. So, Steve, what I did, I went from third base to home, the cross home play, the old Cleveland Stadium. And I figured Lou Gehrig must have done this how many times as a member of the Yankees. And that was a special thing. But I had the opportunity to do that. But getting back to baseball right now, a lot of teams are playing .500 baseball, which is good. It's good for baseball. Usually, I used to tell Vince Famoli, like Vince Famoli, you're Vince, I just got to get through. Just get through. When the kids get out from school, everybody in tennis will be increasing right now because what's the kids want to do? Watch a baseball game.
Tommy, we only have another hour.
Oh, okay. Hey, well, I was thinking about, you know, like doing that, Steve. And I see there's the old days up there, you know. But I think that's, you know, it's great the way it's been done up there. So I still believe that Lou Gehrig's a, you know, great what he did for baseball. Fantastic. I watched the movie again and again and again. And it's a special meaning, Steve, because, like, you know, we, you know, in, you know, spent time in Cleveland, and a lot of story with the old Cleveland Stadium being up there and that, and it's a lot of story being that way and that. So that's why I got my 30 seconds in.
Okay. There you go.
You go. You got it in 3.5 minutes, Tommy.
I was
wrong. Freddie Freeman's okay. He's playing. He's at first base. The Braves and the Nats are tied at one.
That's good.
The Yanks are up 4-1 right now, but still batting. And they got a couple guys on. Steve, I'll tell you, it's always a fun. I tell you, we could go with you for 2 hours,
here.
And we all have differences of opinion about different things. So thank you very, very much, as always. We all learned something. Thank you very, very much.
Yep.
I hope you join us real soon again.
Thank you, Steve.
I always look forward to it, gentlemen. Take care.
Thanks, Steve. As always, Steve. Take care. Thank you.
Well, Mike is standing by now. I had a great introduction for him last week, but he never got on the phone. He hadn't paid his telephone bill. But he kept emailing me, telling me he was in desperate straits. And I never found out exactly what happened to him. And then when the phone worked for him last week, I still haven't found out. Have you calmed down at all, Mike?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm fine. I was just remarking on the fact that, you know, after the Capitals went out, it was just like the sky was falling up here. And maybe it was because we've had all those cicadas, so... You know how that goes.
Mm-hmm. Kick it off, Roger.
Well, Mike, the Nats and the Braves are tied at one, and it looks like the Nats are going to get out of this. They are. But we were talking about in hockey about the Caps, you know, or out, and what's your opinion about what happened to the Capitals and the Nats are in last place in the division, but I think they'll correct that. What's your impression of the Nats and what happened to the Caps?
Well, I think the Caps suffered a little bit from the fact that all the injuries
right.
that they've been able to put up for mm-hmm. put up with for years or put all 3 years kind of
yep.
caught all up with them at the same time. But part of the problem
mm-hmm.
is when you have one of the oldest rosters in the NHL, injuries are a thing. This is an old team. It's a veteran team. It's a heavy team.
Mm-hmm.
And we've known for a while now that the NFL is getting a little bit – NHL is getting a little bit quicker, that there's more of an
mm-hmm.
emphasis on speed, and this sort of lumbering heavyweight old school Broad Street Bullies lineup that the Caps try
right.
to keep running back year after year after
mm-hmm.
year just isn't going to get it done. But they don't have a lot of salary cap flexibility to make moves, so I think that you're going to see some changes. You got the expansion draft coming up. There's a
right.
lot of rumors flowing around right now that the Caps will leave T.J. Oshie, who has ties to the Seattle area, to Washington.
Ooh.
They'll leave him unprotected, and then the Kraken will probably take him to be the initial face of the franchise. The GM of the Capitals was stopped short of saying that he would definitely protect Oshie in the expansion draft. Oshie said, you know, he wanted to stay here, but they have a lot of other players that they need to protect.
Right.
There looks to be a trade that they're going to move Kuznetsov this offseason. They finally had enough of the underperforming on the ice and the, well, off the ice issues that he's been dealing with. He wasn't available for most of the playoffs because of a protocol breach, and he spent a lot of time in the COVID protocols. That hurt them moving forward. So maybe they'll get some salary cap relief off of that. You know, they don't have a lot to make a lot of moves with, so they're really going to be sniff around the edges as they try and figure out how to handle this. And then, you know, the big question is, of course, Obi's contract, which is up after next year. You know, do you want to re-sign him? It's hard to see them not re-signing him and allowing him to finish his career and break whatever records he's going to break in a Capitals uniform. But, you know, if you're going to sign him, what's that cost going to be? And can you put a competitive team around him? You know, the fact that this – I think if you had asked Caps fans when he got drafted if they would take the one cup and be happy with it, the answer would have almost been uniformly yeah, because this isn't a team that's enjoyed a lot of success. And at that point, this wasn't a city that would have enjoyed a lot of success. But if he retires with only the one cup finals appearance and the one win, it's going to feel kind of like a little bit of a disappointment. So, you know, it's suffering from the same old, okay, we're in the same place, we've been here before, we finally got to break down and do something different. They got rid of the coach last year. Laviolette came in, he had a better regular season, but again, we're looking at a first-round playoff exit in which they were, you know, to be honest, they were pretty thoroughly outplayed by Boston, and they just could not compete with them for basically the last four games of the series. The first two were really, really close, but as that series went on, Boston just was able to kind of skate around them. And so you're going to have to see them look in a slightly different direction moving forward if they want to be competitive in the Eastern Conference next year.
Mike, let me ask you this. Washington was supposed to have a competitive. Now, granted, a lot of injuries on the baseball front. How has it affected the crowds? How's the interest in Washington now that they're really struggling with injuries and able to put together any kind of a winning combination?
Well, you know, right now the crowds are still going out because it's still a novelty to be able to go back and watch a baseball game after a year away. So you're still getting a lot of interest in fans wanting to go out, wanting to be part of the game, just wanting to re-experience that sort of
How many do they allow in per game?
I know it was about – it's going up in D.C. I haven't looked at the mayor's latest figures, but I believe they, like the Phillies, are heading back towards 100%. So I know when it started, it was like 6,000. It had been 12 miles. I think they're going to go back and open it up. But even if they open it up entirely, you know, what is that on average is going to be like 25,000, 27,000. It's, you know, the ballpark is comparable in size to Citizens Bank, maybe a little bit smaller. So the crowds are there as much as they can be because the novelty is still there. But, you know, the struggles of the team this year combined with the struggles of the team last year are starting to take a toll. People are starting to think as though, you know, maybe that World Series was more of a fluke than a sign of progress.
Ooh. I'm shocked as you said that, Mike, because Davey Martin is always years in baseball with the Rays and Chicago White Sox and everything put together, the talent to win that World Series. I don't think it was a fluke. Right things in the right place at the right time up there. That's the whole thing. It's just like when you put the Rays under Joe Madden.
I don't think they're saying it's a fluke because of Davey Martinez's ability. Remember, though, they were what? 17-37, something like that, before they went on a ridiculous run that season. And, you know, kind of all the stars aligned perfectly.
Yes,
they were getting an offense, a bullpen, which had been struggling throughout so much the early season, all of a sudden became a strength. And the real big one there was Steven Strasburg was healthy and consistent for the longest stretch of his career, probably. You know, now the starting pitching's been very inconsistent. Strasburg's back in and out of the lineup. Corbin's been hit a lot. And the most important thing is they just have not been able to get the bats to work consistently at all. You can see them. They can go out. They can put up 11 runs one night, and then they'll go three or four nights without being able to score more than two.
Yeah.
Roger?
Tough thing.
You know, Mike, getting back to or getting over to soccer, the United, you know, they when I was there, what, a couple Saturdays ago, as you know, they won in that exciting, 94th minute, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
1-0. But then they've had two ties. And Saturday night I was watching it for a while, and it was a 2-2 tie against Nashville. And what do you think of their chances? Do you think that they're on the rise, or maybe they've leveled off?
I think they're definitely a much better team than they were last year, and they're showing it. MLS season is a lot, and I think sometimes, kind of like the NHL, you've heard me say to Tommy so many times, like, I don't really pay attention to the NHL in a regular season until around Valentine's Day, maybe President's Day. It doesn't really start to matter. With the MLS season, you know, it really, you can lose it early, but you really need to look at what they're doing once the weather starts to change, once, you know, we get past the Memorial Day, we get into the dog days of summer, you know, when the transfer window opens and if they can get more players in and they can address some of their needs. I've seen teams, DC United being the best example, you know, they picked up Wayne Rooney around early part of June, early to mid-June, and they were dead last and went on a run and made it to the playoffs. So, you know, if they can add that one or two pieces that they may need, a lot of it's going to depend on Joseph Martinez, who's still coming off that catastrophic knee injury, how effectively and how quickly he returns to health and, you know, some semblance of the player that he was before he went down, because he's still really their main goal-scoring threat. And they're going to need him. So much of what they do goes through him. And as he rounds himself back out in shape. Now, they have a two-week break right now. You know, we're about to enter into tournament season for the internationals. It starts tomorrow. You know, the U.S. has the game against Honduras in CONCACAF Nations League. They'll play... you know, if they beat Honduras, they'll play Sunday night in the championship game. Next week, next Friday, as a matter of fact, the European Cup postponed. The following Sunday is the start of the Copa America. A lot of the MLS players will be down there with the nations in South America. So in addition to that, you know, they're going to take – all the teams in MLS are going to take a two-week break. But when they come back, they may be missing some key players. I know for the Philadelphia Union, like Jaime Montero is going to be gone. And he could miss, depending on how far the team goes, he could miss a couple of regular of important games, right? And then in July, again, the Gold Cup starts. So it'll be a mostly MLS-based team for – all of those teams, so a lot of those players could be absent again. I'm saying that to say, Roger, it's going to be a really tricky season to handicap where teams are, because we may not see a full roster again until sometime in like September.
Wow.
Tommy?
Shocking.
You're talking about 4 months. Yeah.
What's shocking about the soccer skipping in and out. So, like, who thinks going to win the Stanley Cup on a switchback to hockey right now? Now, how much pressure is on Ovechkin right now? Because I read all the papers. Washington, this is Alex's team. I mean, this is they got rid of Barry Trotz, unfortunately. And Peter Lof, head coach, when he's with Carolina up there. And, you know, I think everything was all for Ovechkin. And once again, Washington, they're in the playoffs, so shocking again. They have a big regular season, and they come up shocking in the playoffs. What do you think? It's got to be this. What do you think? Are they going to do franchise, yes or no, or stick with the same group of fellows that got them there this past year?
I think they realize, again, I think they realize that they need to put some more around him. I don't think there's any pressure on him. I don't think there's any pressure on Ovechkin.
Okay.
Ovechkin could retire tomorrow, and he would be – he'd never buy another meal or drink in this city as long as he stayed here. There's no pressure on Ovechkin. Everybody realizes up here, like, there's only but so much that one hockey player on a team can do, right? We've seen so many teams that had that one star that just were never able to do it because it takes so many players to make out a roster and be competitive. There's really no pressure on Ovechkin, anything other than what he does, which is to score the goals that he scores and make them a legitimate team. I think the most of the pressure now lies on the ownership and the general manager to put a team around them, right? They had Barry Trotz. They got into the contract dispute. They made the move to let him go. The Learners let him go, right? They brought in Reardon. They thought he was supposed to be the guy. They let Trotz go because they thought Reardon was going to be the guy. He wasn't.
That's terrible.
They turned around. They brought in Laviolette. All right, so now you got your coaching fixed up. I mean, there's not many more people who have a better resume in the NHL than Laviolette does.
Right.
It's down to what you can put around him to play. And, again, this sort of lumbering team. You were already the oldest team in the league when you signed Ilya Kovalchuk last year. You went out and you signed the only player in the NHL who actually still played against Wayne Gretzky.
That's right. Yes, that's a great point when you think about it.
I was talking to somebody. I said, you know, Zdeno Chara's been in the league so long that his rookie year, I was still in high school, and I'm about to go back to my 25th class reunion in the next couple of years.
Oh,
you're just a child.
That's
right. I'm 25th reunion.
My gosh.
Oh boy! Remember mine.
Mike, are you on the Lightning bandwagon? Do you think they're playing or will continue to play the kind of hockey they're playing right now, which has been just exceptional? And the other thing is there any comments in Washington about what they're going to do about the Canadian group? How they're going to make this next round come about? Are the Canadians going to, acquiesce and say,
thinking Don is correct. You know, you still got one more round within the sort of conference, right? So it's not until you get to the final four. So they've got another round before they can figure out this Canadian thing. The guess would be if the travel restrictions are still in place the way that they look like they are and they probably could be, then the series will have to be played in America, which I think would be a tremendous disadvantage to the Canadian teams.
Yes,
you know,
yes, it would.
I was talking to my stepfather, who's a huge Canadiens fan, Montreal Canadiens. He's from Montreal, so it's understandable. And they were they've been loving this. You know, the whole getting to see Montreal and Toronto in a playoff series, having it go the way they were. You know, the Montreal Canadiens fans were absolutely over the moon. The Canadiens, even the Toronto fans, I don't know if you saw the picture making its rounds around social media of the fan who went and left the vintage hockey helmet outside the stadium before Game 7 as an offering to the hockey gods to help the Toronto Maple Leafs win. I mean, it's just been great watching those series. No, I like the Lightning. You are the champ until you're not. They're certainly playing like the champs. I just think it's going to be a lot different when we get this whole thing in the conference finals and it gets all mixed up because you don't know who you're going to be playing, where you're going to be playing. You know, it's conceivable that Toronto could end up having to play a team on the West Coast or something, likes to negotiate stuff like that in the conference finals. I just think that's going to be the real equalizer and have a better feel. Right now, it's just a war of attrition getting out of these groups because these teams play so often. Just, you know, who can survive more so than who can flourish?
Right. Roger? That's the main thing. Who can...
But no, go ahead, Tommy.
No, that's amazing. Who can? No, I was just gonna say, who can survive in that? I mean, that's the whole thing right now, because you got the Lightning playing Carolina. We played Carolina several times, and after this next round, that's gonna be the interesting round. And then you got the West team for the actually Stanley Cup final. Devin was subtle this thing. The hints around about they could travel in the States right now. And I think they're going to settle this thing because Gary Bettman wants to do everything power for those owners up north of the border right there. So I think he'll do it, and we'll start seeing some hockey players from coming down here playing in the States for the Stanley Cup final. We don't know where it's going to be. I'm hoping to be in Tampa again, but we don't know yet. We've got to get through Carolina first.
Well, switching to another area, and that would be 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, we talked about the owners of the Bucks and the ownership and their hockey franchise. Have things settled down with what's happening in Europe in that regard?
It settled down as far as the season's over, right? You know, it hasn't necessarily settled down for the teams that are that are still nominally part of the European Super League. They're still facing some sanctions from UEFA, but the season's over. And by the way, I would be remiss if I didn't point out that for the first time in history, a American soccer player lifted Europe's most prestigious soccer trophy. Christian Pulisic and Chelsea beat Manchester City to win the European Cup. Pulisic was an instrumental part of that team. He was a fraction of an inch away from scoring the goal in the second half that would have sealed it for Chelsea. But for the first time, we have an American player receiving a Champions League medal, lifting that big-eared trophy, and he went up, kid from Hershey, Pennsylvania, as a matter of fact, goes up, lifts the trophy, and was a critical part of the team. So that tells us a lot about just how U.S. soccer is developing. You know, all the talk, the ESL, fan protests and stuff like that kind of ended in large part on Sunday when the season ended. And now the focus is going to be on the international tournaments, which are going to come up. And it's going to be a fun summer of 3 and 4 games a day played on different continents. It's another one of those seasons where you're probably going to see about 26 to 27 of the teams that will play in the World Cup in 2022 are going to play this summer.
Yeah, Tommy, I was just watching ESPN. The Buffalo Sabres won the number one draft pick in the NHL draft, and then expansion team is going to be have the second pick. So it'll be interesting to see another new team in the NHL next year. And Mike Krzyzewski is going to retire after this next basketball season. So and the associate head coach. But I'll tell you, Mike, I don't know whether you have read anything about this. I saw a story about the change in college basketball. And then there's a stadium or an arena that's going to be built in Atlanta, and it's for this new league, which is going to pay high school or former high school players. They can go there and get their education and get paid $100,000 a year. And it's got some big names backing it up, including Jeff Bezos from Amazon. Have you heard anything about this up in the D.C. area, Mike?
Not really. I mean, there was a lot of talk about the G League and them trying to do this. And so much of it is going to be dependent on the next collective bargaining agreement. If you start a league where you pay high school players, NBA, as that is going to do, instead it drops this a name one-and-done rule and says high school players can go right to the NBA. And that's just, once again, any player that has an inkling that they might be NBA caliber coming out of high school is just going to go right into the NBA. They're not going to try and experiment with that. You know,
But Mike, that's one in a million. That's LeBron James, who was a man in high school. You know, these kids don't have any understanding.
I'm not going to say that they're going to be any good. I'm saying
they can't make a team. How can they? Every team has at least 10 players going into camp that are legitimate NBA players. 10. So you, and then you got the draft. Now you're going to tell me that anybody, I mean, the chances of the draft guys making it if they're not in the first round are really marginal. I mean, it's a sport where, you know, high school, they have no shot in the world. And they're you know, these, their agents or whatever these people are that are advising them are absolutely crazy.
Don, I couldn't agree with you more. Because for every LeBron James, Kevin Garnett, Kobe Bryant, who were superstars straight out of high school, or Jermaine O'Neal or Donovan Becker, who had serviceable NBA careers, I can give you a Sean Livingston or Sebastian Telfair or Darius Miles.
100. You give them 100.
Yeah, they came out and flamed out because they got bad advice, right? I would not tell somebody, you know, try and jump from high school straight into the NBA because you're playing, you know, you're playing against the kids that rode yellow bus to school the year before. You're going from playing against them to Joel Embiid, right? That's too great a leap for anybody really to make unless you're in that elite category. All I'm saying
is, but see, Mike, they're not going to do that. That's not the concept. The concept is that they can come out of high school and play in their league of just players like that, okay? And
but
they can get an
education.
Where are
they going to get the $100,000 to pay them, Roger? Where's the $100,000
to come from? It's coming from the investors in the league and also from the fans, okay? So, but it's going to be a league of younger people, younger players. And what I think it's going to do, it's going to kill college basketball in many ways.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to kill college basketball because I think that you might get the one-and-dones who are going
to go. I couldn't agree with you more. College basketball is so superior to the pro game now. It's unbelievable. By the way, Philadelphia is up 94-87 over your Washington club. And it looks like Washington's going to they're gonna take a bath, too, just like the hockey team did. We got a little along because Doug Hamilton is ready to go.
All right.
And
Mike,
have a great week, Mike, and thank you very much.
Yes, thank you, Mike.
Doug, welcome back. It's always a pleasure. And I know you must have one or two things on your mind that you'd like to touch off with this evening. Give us a shot.
Well, I'll tell you. Let's see. I was telling Frank when he patched me in, you know, my sister and her husband and my niece were in town from Kansas, and mom and dad, and they came over to the house. We had a little crab party this past week, and it was nice to see some family and spend some time, and, you know, it really kind of, you know, just brings everything full circle, you know, when you work for a living and you know, your nose is to the grindstone, or even in my case, when I wasn't working, you know, for that period of time, you know, how important, you know, family is and how much support you guys gave me and how much you cared about, you know, me getting a job and getting myself back together. And it's just, I don't know. So I would just open the show with just a little bit of gratitude for, you know, taking a deep breath every day and understanding what's really important to you and you know, getting your priorities in line, so to speak, you know, and Frank and I had a nice chat and we were talking about the transition from, you know, old job to new job and just how much better of a position it is for me now. And I have the opportunity to speak to some of my old members from time to time, and they tell me it's just not the same that it used to be. They're, you know, the ownership is not running that old club like it used to be run. And you know, I'm just incredibly happy that I've moved on and found an opportunity elsewhere and you know, can build from there. So, you know, that's kind of the editorial for life, you know, as far as, you know, the show and the sports and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, there's There's a lot going on. If you're a hockey fan, you're in the playoffs. If you're a basketball mm-hmm. fan, you're in the playoffs. If you know, you're a baseball fan, you know, you're watching your team, you're getting ready for football season. You know, lots of different stuff. I mean, obviously we've talked about horse racing before. We've got the Belmont this weekend, the third leg of the Triple Crown, and there's just a lot of stuff going on, you know. So it's good to be a fan and watch all the stuff unravel.
Doug, I got a question for you. Okay.
Go ahead, Roger.
You just mentioned about that you got to see your sister, brother-in-law, and your niece. I understand that your brother-in-law, is he still in the service?
Yes. He's in the Army. He's not quite yet. I think that he may actually be, but they're the actual ceremony, I believe, is forthcoming in August, I think I heard my mom say. And, you know, it's a rough life. You know, I know that my niece Miriam has moved around from, you know, Washington State to Oklahoma to now Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, and they're doing their thing. And, you know, unfortunately, I haven't seen any one of the three really that much over the course of time. And I think my brother-in-law John is about ready to get out. When they stopped by and they came down to the golf course, I wound up playing a few holes with my niece. She's 9 and she plays a little bit of golf, and I went out and I took her out and played 3 holes with her. And I think John, you could see it on his face that he was, you know, a little weathered from, you know, the dating back to when he was in the ROTC at Bucknell where he and my sister met. And I think he's about ready to shut it down. So
mm-hmm.
What year did your sister graduate?
Let's see. I graduated from GW in 96. I think my sister was 94.
Okay. So she would have been a few years ahead of my daughter. My daughter graduated in 02.
Okay.
And so my son-in-law played football there. He would have been the same.
Nice.
They're the same age. And But
I paid a visit to the school, and it's a nice little quaint campus. It's Lewisburg, I guess, and it's like
very
one of those
expensive
odd
school.
Well, it is. It's a smaller variety, but you have Lewisburg, and that's what that's pretty much what it is. It's Bucknell, and then there's really nothing else, if I remember correctly, from going
out
there.
It's a beautiful campus, and have had a lot of well-known people, including Hall of Fame basketball coach Jay Wright, a graduate of Buckeye.
That's right.
Tommy?
Yep.
But I wanted to find out because I was told that your brother-in-law was, and I guess your sister, were over in Japan for a while. Is that right?
Yes, my sister actually went over there. She talked English to the Japanese. I know that my brother-in-law has been deployed a number of different times. He's probably traveled, who knows how far, and he's definitely a frequent flyer, I would assume, in terms of the miles he's traveled through deployment. So I'm sure he's happy to be back and he's originally from the Pennsylvania area and probably itching to get back here. And I'd love to have, my sister and everybody back a little bit closer here on the East Coast so that we could, do some holidays and that sort of thing.
Sure.
Miss that.
Well,
so.
I only brought this up because we just had Memorial Day, and mm-hmm. I'm retired from the Navy and a son of a retired Army colonel and a grandson of a retired Army colonel. So that's why I brought it up. So
sure.
Now we'll get back to sport.
Right.
No, that's very interesting to hear about Doug's family tree up there. That's getting ready to be back to one spot again. It'd be great. Doug, hot weekend of the springtime right now. And what do you tell the players going out for the first time? And you know the temperature is going to be 80 in the high 80s right now and sunshine up there.
Yeah. I can tell you that once we get into the real heat of the summer, which we're not there yet, this will be your first taste. We've had a few 90 degree days, but by and large, the membership that I represent is a little bit more mature in terms of their ages, and they love to play fairly early in the morning. you know, and kind of get their rounds in and then move on to whatever it is they do the rest of the day. But, you know, I just think that, you know, guys that go out the night before and you know, go to parties and bars and drinking and carrying on and wake up and all of a sudden, you know, they get through about 9 holes and they wonder why they have no gas because they're dehydrated. So, I mean, obviously, you know, all right. The precautions are, you know, in place with regard to, you know, having, you know, plenty of hydration, whether that's water, Gatorade, whatever. Sunscreen is incredibly important, you know, because even on, you know, 70, 75 degree days where the sun's, you know, nice and warm, you can still catch a nice burn. So we've been selling in the golf shop, you know, the wide brim hats, the bucket caps. A lot of the ladies are looking to wear the UPF kind of long sleeve stuff. You know, coverage of skin, particularly your nose, your ears, your head, et cetera. You know, certain layers of clothing that you can wear. I mean, you don't really want to wear incredibly dense cotton that doesn't really wick the moisture and pull it away from your body so that you can perspire and still breathe and be good there. You know, wet towels, you know, different things that you can do to ensure sunglasses. I think if you can, some people can't play in them, but I think that, you know, covering your eyes and making sure we don't have any issues, you know, with sun in your eyes, those sorts of things. You know, finding, you know, ample shade when you're, you know, in between shots or, you know, whatever. You know, at the turn, you know, certainly getting food that's light. Certainly we don't want to, you know, eat heavy things, fried foods, sauces, et cetera. You know, the old hot dog at the turn is probably not going to cut it. You know, I believe in snacking and kind of light fare. So, you know, almonds, nuts, you know, if you're going to eat something at the turn, maybe it's fruit, maybe it's, you know, half of a wrap or something that's, you know, not incredibly, you know, filling. So there's, you know, there's any number of things that we can do that, you know, ensure that we're going to, you know, be safe, be cool, and still play some good golf.
Amazing. It's good golf.
Let's switch to baseball for a second because we sort of had not high hopes, but middle ground hopes when the Orioles broke out of camp and Sarasota that and they came out of the gate in pretty fair fashion, but unfortunately the last 3 weeks have been a disaster. What's the feeling in Baltimore?
You know, I think it's awfully nice that fans are allowed to come back to you know, Camden Yards, and I think that, you know, I think there's a lot of fans that are buying into, you know, what's going on, and I think, I don't know how much longer that'll last in terms of the patience level, but, you know, I think that you know, there is some – I'm actually curious to see what the Orioles do as we get closer to the trade deadline because, unfortunately, if you look at some of the players that they have, John Means, Trey Mancini, Cedric Mullins, you know, there's, you know, Santander, Franco, Galvis, you know, guys that, I mean, whoever's in the bullpen, I think that they have some pieces that have value. The question is the value greater than – you know, what they're going to produce and will they be a part of the rebuilding process in a few years when we actually do have, you know, the proper prospects in place to play at the major league level. I mean, you know, year after year, I mean, I think we have the 5th overall pick this year. As it continues to move forward and the Orioles continue to lose, it's likely that we're going to have a top, you know, couple pick, you know, in the following year's draft. So, I mean, how many years do we need of, you know, getting these top 5 draft picks because as you guys know, I mean, it's not instantaneous that you get drafted and then all of a sudden, you know, the year after, 2 years after you're in the major leagues, it doesn't really work that way. So, I mean, Adley Rutschman, I think is probably at least a year, maybe two away. And, you know, they have some other pieces in Double A that have pitched pretty well. Rodriguez, DL Hall, you know, guys like that I think are eventually going to make an impact. But, you know, where do we stand in 2 or 3 years with what we have in place in the minor leagues versus what we have, you know, at the major league level? I mean, I think at one point in time, Trey Mancini was leading Major League Baseball in RBI, you know, but I don't see him being a part of that process in 2 or 3 years. You know, would someone be willing to give us, you know, pieces that can help us in terms of that rebuilding process? So, I mean, I think there's the fans like watching the Orioles, but they also understand that they're not, you know, very good, and that's kind of the price you pay for being good in a few years, and that's the hope, I suppose. So,
Roger?
Interesting.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, they've been working on this for a few years now,
yeah.
And I think the reward will be in the near term. You know,
I hope so.
They have to build the farm system up, and that's what we talked about earlier. The Phillies are just in dire straits because of poor general manager operation for several years. And I just looked at stats tonight. Four or five years ago, the Phillies had the number one pick in the draft, Mickey Moniak. And he's hitting 170 or something like that at AAA. And, when we were talking with Mike earlier, Doug, Don and I had talked about this. This was a number of years ago. Steven Strasburg. When he came into Major League Baseball, they had him going into the Hall of Fame.
Right.
And, it might have happened, but when you have injuries, it takes its toll and it changes everything.
Well, Roger, I said this when the decision had to be made between signing Rendon versus Strasburg. Not one person would listen to me when I kept saying, sign Anthony Rendon. I said, you can't spend that kind of money for a pitcher, and his velocity has dropped. He's injured. They are going to wind up spending whatever it was, $200 million on Steven Strasburg and get nothing in return when this contract is all said and done. You know, he came out of San Diego State as a flamethrower, and his mechanics were built for that 95 to 100 mile an hour fastball until he got injured. And, you know, you watch him pitch now, he hangs around 91, 92, and, you know, he has to pitch now instead of just throw the baseball. And, you know, if it were up to me, I'd have spent the money on Anthony Rendon because, unfortunately, I get to watch a lot of the Nationals games, and they can't hit a lick. So, you know, I think there's – what we're talking about, Roger, there's a fine line between the supplementation of a very strong minor league system that develops their players and moves them along incrementally that has them ready for the major leagues, and then you turn around and say, hey, I've got a few extra dollars here that I can spend in free agency, so let me sweeten the pot by adding a couple extra players that I think can get us over the hump. And you guys know that, you know, very well, you know, signing some free agents in Philadelphia, and one of them is your right fielder. So, I mean, if you're not ready to spend that kind of money and you're not ready to win, you're wasting time, you know, aside from putting butts in the seats, you know, it's not going to do any good.
Well,
I was the first thing you have to think about is the fact that Harper, you thought about signing Harper for the number of dollars. The best signing in baseball so far for a superstar, the Dodgers signed a player that was through. He's hit three home runs and driven out of how many runs so far in what's he been there, 2 weeks or week and a half or something like that. And that's when you spend the money. Spend it on Strasburg, spend it on Harper, and to the expense of all the other players that you need to make a team valuable is ridiculous.
Right.
And long-term contracts, I don't care if it's Babe Ruth, long-term contracts don't buy you anything.
Right.
Well, the other thing, Don, with Harper, he plays so hard at 28 years old, he's been crashed into the wall. Look at how many games he's played because he came up so young, and he was wet on the cover of Sports Illustrated coming into major leagues. But it takes its toll, and I agree. I just do not go for long-term contracts. And I'll tell you now, J.P. Rizzo, that is too long. And Howard said that last week. You don't give a 5-year contract to a 31-year-old catcher or 30-year-old catcher.
Well, look at Stanton. The Yankees are saddled with Stanton now for, another 8 years?
Right.
I mean, you can get a guy out of high school. He may not hit the home runs as Stanton hits, but his average, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Right.
There's no production.
You're right.
Well, you know, it's a simple mathematical computation when these guys are doing this. First of all, you're paying for the front end production that you hope you get that offsets the back end's slide. You know, but at the same time, you know, you're having to compete with all these teams. Somebody's going to spend the money, and if you want him, you've got to go get him. That's what you have to offer him. I mean, did anybody think that signing Albert Pujols for 10 years when he was, whatever old, you know what I mean, 32?
Ridiculous.
Was that a good idea?
Ridiculous.
You know what I mean? But
Dodgers, got him for the right price.
Right.
Angels let him go, and the Dodgers got him for nothing. If he helps them at all,
that's right.
They've won.
For sure, for sure.
All that money left.
That's a good administration.
Right.
Well,
you know,
I guess there's
no doubt
of that. Andrew Friedman, where you get this? Where
well,
are you serious from?
Yeah,
the Tampa
right,
Bay,
Tom.
Gary Hunt Center.
Yeah, and I
there
look at
go.
Tampa Bay, perfect example of how you have a small market with a very successful team. Unfortunately, they don't draw, but they still put a great product on the field and win every year.
They do.
Darn right. They got a great product on the field. They won the regular league championship last year. They won the World Series 2008. And it goes down from looking at administrative people like CBK would say in baseball itself. And the main thing that made Andrew Friedman the genius that he is, and I talked to him one day when he's with the Rays. I says, "I bet you're thanking your stars that, you know, like the Jerry Hunsinger's office is right next door to you." He says, "Tommy, yes, I do." So that kind of gave me the hint right there that he's learned everything from Jerry Hunsinger. And you look what Andrew Friedman's done. Got the Dodgers a World Championship last year. And that's good for the Dodgers.
Well, the one thing, Tommy, you have to take into consideration, the Dodgers spend a lot of money. They have they're either the highest or second highest payroll team. But they've got depth and players. They're just signing one guy and expecting him to turn the franchise around. They have a million guys in it between the farm system and the parent club. They got players everywhere.
Hey, guys, hang on for that thought till next week. Frank Diamond said, tick, tick, tock, up against the clock, guys.
Okay, well, fellas, thank you very much. Another great week. Take care.
Thank
sir.
You. Thank you, Don. Thank you, Roger.
Frank. Doug, have a great week.
Yep.
And Tommy, good to hear you. You sound strong. That's great. Frank, as you always, thank you. You are our leader, our colonel.
Yes, yes.
Commander.
Yes, Frank, he's the commander-in-chief right there. So, well, Frank, thank you for everything. I'd like to thank all our guests for coming on every week. The most important thing is, you know, what Frank does every week for this show for the last X amount of years, we can't thank him enough. This is the best two hours of the week being on TV talk on the Internet Talk of Sports. Frank, God bless you, and a great job as always tonight.
Great. Thanks, Dan. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of police and fire services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, please, please let them know they're there. These are very difficult times for anybody in uniform. These programs are dedicated to those who have lost their lives in line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Tallcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yaswitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerber, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Anofo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Chief Al Hogel, Longwood County Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Clegg Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff, Sergeant James O'Connor, Philadelphia Police Department, Sergeant Rodney Bond, Delaware State Police, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Ardith Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, Deputy Lee Special Inspector Vinny Galaccio, Delaware State Trooper Corporal Stephen Ballard, Kissimmee Patrol Officer Matt Baxter, Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Bill Gentry, Highland County Sheriff's Department, Debbie Clay Zerba, Clay County Sheriff's Department. Deputy Natalie Corona, L.A. County Sheriff's Department. Deputy April Rodriguez, Pasco County Sheriff's Department. Officer Bob McCutcheon, Biloxi, Kentucky Police Department. Trooper Joe Bullock, Florida Highway Patrol. Sergeant Brian LeBate, Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department. And Deputy Mike Malik, Pinellas County Sheriff's Department. And Lieutenant Deborah Clayton, Orlando Police Department. My brothers and sisters, you may be 10-7 at this point in time, but sometime you'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you, may the winds be always at your back, may the rains fall softly on your fields, and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. Good night, God bless, and have a great weekend.
Shema Ezahil Ma Son Hashem Nevorat Fet Hakuig Again Ma Ezahil Ma
advised, 1999 is responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul.